Where I make wine, I like to push the limits of where grapes ripen.
People just need to trust their own palate and not be concerned about what a critic says or what they read in the paper.
As a master sommelier, I mean, for me, at this point in my life, I'm kind of more in the Yoda stage.
My dad used to say when I was a little kid that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
I had a moment when I realized the power of wine. One day at a dinner, a bottle of Mouton Rothschild 1955 was opened and it just like silenced the whole table.
I'm so happy when a friend of mine sells a bottle of wine. And I love to brag about the wines that are being made by our friends because I'm so proud of them.
Farming is agricultural warfare.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 164.
And this week we visit a special section of our website. We call it Vinolingo. It's true that winemakers tell the best stories. But they also use the coolest words. Wine words, that is. During our travels, we ask our guests to give us their definitions of common and not-so-common wine words. These are the folks that use these terms day after day. Many winemakers have their own take on a certain word and enjoy sharing their opinion. It is with this podcast we ask you to sit back and maybe learn something new, perhaps a word or two.
Hi, my name is Pam Starr with Crocker and Starr Winery, and my Vinolingo word today is stress. And there are two sides to stress. There's the vine stress, which refers to the state in which a vine is fighting with the soil particles for water and nutrients, and it is the viticulturist and the wine growers' desire that stress be what I would say on the balance side, meaning that it's not too stressed. The vine is not struggling too hard. If the stress goes too far, the plant will show its colors with short shoots and discoloration of leaves. And the other aspect of Vinolingo stress is for winemakers in less than optimal conditions, as stress, winemakers get one time a year to produce a wine and harvest if it's not going exactly how it's been designed. If best laid plans don't work, then stress tends to come forward.
I'm Tor Kenward of Tor Kenward Family Wines. My word is actually two words, if I'm allowed. It's optimal ripeness. It's used a lot, and what it means is the perfect time to pick a grape. And a perfect time to pick a grape really will depend on where that grape is, where it is in the cluster, where it is on the vine, or on the whether it's a cordon or a cane shoot, and where that is, that vine is in the vineyard. Bump, bump, bump. You can just extend it on out. It's very, very different, you know, 50 feet away from that vine to that vine. It becomes very, very different. So optimum ripeness is the perfect time to pick that grape, that year, that vintage. It's the same thing that you have when you're going to the farmer's market. And toward the end of the season, you go up to the melon guy, and he's got those little samples of melons. And if you've never been to a farmer's market that had the melon guy, I'm sorry for you. Anyway, at that time, he'll give you a bite of melon that will, you just go, oh my gosh, this is what melon really is. It isn't what I usually have when I'm traveling at this hotel or that hotel in December. This is that wonderful October melon because it's sweet, almost to the point where it's painfully sweet, yet it still has fabulous acidity, and it still is crunchy. It has great texture. It hasn't started to fall apart yet. And that is exactly what we're trying to do with wine grapes, and that is optimal ripeness.
This is Mark Donati with Donati Family Vineyard, and my word for the day is racking. And basically what racking entails is naturally cleaning up the wines in terms of removing some of the heavy sediment. So the process of racking involves removing the wine out of the barrel, pumping it back into what we use as a big steel tank. At that point, when the barrel's empty, we use a high-pressured hose to rinse out the inside of the barrel to remove a lot of the heavy sediments. And then we pump the wine back in, we top it off, put the bung back in, put it back to bed, and we'll bring it back to life again several months after that. And that's racking.
My name's Brett Bartolucci, and I'm the fourth generation of Madonna Estate Winery in the Napa Valley. We're located in the Carneros region, the southern end of the valley. And my word today is Brettanomyces. And I picked this word because my first name is Brett, so I get teased a lot because Brettanomyces, the short version of the word, is Brett. And basically what it is, in a short definition, is it's a mildew or bacteria, rather, that can get inside of barrels that can cause off flavors or aromas to the wine, such as a characteristic that might be considered like a barnyard characteristic or a more, shall we say, manure characteristic. So I often ask my parents, on a side note, why they named me Brett, because I'm in the wine industry.
I'm Steve Fennell, the winemaker and general manager for Sanford, and my word is vinifera, species Vitis vinifera. And it's really what is known as the European both wine grapes and table grapes, actually. So certainly if you think of anything planted in Europe or California, Oregon, Washington, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, all of those grapes are vinifera.
This is Claire Weinkauf with Picayune Cellars for Vinolingo, the word maceration. So when you macerate the grape, you let the grapes hang in its juice and skin. And so basically, the juice is going to get infused by the flavor and the color and the tannins contained in the skin.
Name's Phil Steinschreiber. I'm the winemaker for Diamond Creek Vineyards and for my own winery as well called Watermark. And today we'll discuss bloom in the vineyards. And bloom is when the vine is pushing its flowers, and just that, it's a bloom. It's a bloom of the flowers. And the vine itself basically fertilizes itself. It best happens when the temperatures are about 75 to 85 degrees, when it's clear days, when it's not raining, because that can eventually lead to shatter. So we get these nice little flowers, and we like to have them set as much fruit as possible. And basically, that's what bloom is.
I'm Paul Leary from Blackbird Vineyards in Napa Valley, California, and my word is Merlot. How do I think about Merlot? Merlot is when we first started Blackbird. The first vintage of the wine was 96 Merlot, 96%. The second vintage, I think, was 95%. Merlot to us, what people forget is that Merlot is one of the most noble varietals in the world. And noble is a technical term there within the wine industry. The most expensive wine at release every year generally is a Merlot, Chateau Petrus. Merlot gives you great density and plushness and roundness. It's a little bit more approachable in its youth than its brother, Cabernet Sauvignon. To us, it's a wine that, because it's a very high-producing or high-yield wine, if it's grown in the right restrictive environment, can yield absolutely amazing character. We focus on Merlot because it's not as common in the Napa Valley. You know, what's interesting is it's not Merlot, it's Merlot, by the way. If you look up the pronunciation. And you can see when I say that, sometimes people kind of look at you. I'm like, no, that's actually how you say it. So there's a tidbit right there. There are so many great left bank wines in the United States, in California, in the Napa Valley. We wanted to focus on the right bank, and Merlot is the queen there. Our winemaker, Aaron Pott, lives by Merlot. besides all the other varietals he makes. So, for us, the name Blackbird, the name Merlot, they mean something to one another. Merlot translates as little blackbird. So when we think about the Merlot wines that we produce, they're wines that, like I say, although they have approachability in their youth, they have true ageability. You know, we produce wines that have, 25-plus years. And people don't think about that. They forget about that, of what the varietal can be. And so for us, it's something that we have, true respect for and look forward to being able to share with others.
Michael Zardo, winemaker at 10 Acre. I've been asked a question, what is free run juice? So free run is the juice that will come out of a fermenter without any mechanical operations, such as a press. So whatever comes out that runs free without the use of a press, that is the free run juice.
Hello, my name is Christopher Van Andriesch with White Rock Vineyards. Our vineyard is called White Rock because of the white volcanic soil that the vines are planted in. It's basically volcanic ash that's been compressed over time to make rocks that are crumbly and friable. The flavor profile is a very mineral flavor profile from this kind of soil. It gives bright, fruity characters, some licorice in the red wines, definitely a lemon, citrus, whetstone minerality in the white wines.
I'm Doug Schaefer, and the word of the day is green thinning. Green thinning is the whole concept of thinning off, thinning out, pulling off underripe fruit out of a vineyard before harvest. It's usually right around veraison, another term, which is when grapes change color, if they're red grapes, or if they're white grapes, kind of go from being hard to softer, if you will. But with red grapes especially, it's very easy to walk through a vineyard halfway through veraison. Veraison might last a week, 10 days, and you can go through, and as a vineyard is almost 80% turn color, you can go through and see a cluster that's still green berries. That cluster is definitely less ripe than the majority of the clusters. So if you don't do anything, that green cluster, those green berries, will turn black, but at harvest time, they're going to be much less ripe. They'll be quite underripe compared to the primary crop. But the guys picking won't know that. They'll say that they're black grapes, they're going to pick it. So the idea is at veraison, right when that color change happens, going through the vineyard, identifying these clusters that are way behind, way green compared to already turned color, and snipping them off, thinning the crop off, putting it on the ground, because we don't want that underripe fruit in the tank. You can take green thinning to the next level. You can have a cluster that has half the cluster is pretty green and the rest has turned color. You can actually snip off half that cluster. Then you can take it to the super extreme level, which Elias has talked me into doing for Hillside Select, where you actually go in and you pull off green berries off a cluster. So you're taking berries off of a cluster. Now that's very extreme, and one would only do that usually with, top quality wines, because it's incredibly labor intensive. But just the whole notion of green thinning right at veraison, getting those green clusters off so they don't end up in the tank later.
My name is Lynn Grace from Wiseacre Vineyard. My description of biodynamic, it would be, in a nutshell, harnessing the energy of your particular piece of property, or enhancing that energy, bringing it together, farming with intent. If you are farming biodynamically and organically, if you're farming that way, you're going to produce a better grape because there is so much intention involved and focus, positive energy. You can't be a bad farmer because when you're out there farming biodynamically, you're farming so intimately, so microbially, it's a better product.
Hello, I am Vincenzo Ippolito from Ippolito 1845 Winery from Calabria, southern of Italy. And my wine is made with the Gallioppo grapes. Gallioppo is a very unique grape, which gives you very exclusive wine experience. It's very complex on the nose, from fruity to spicy notes, with a very good taste. It's very intense and persistent. It's a full-bodied wine. And I suggest you to drink it with tasty food, like steak, sausage, or some tasty pasta from our region, and enjoy that together.
This is Aaron Weinkoff, a winemaker and vineyard manager for Spotswood Winery, here speaking on behalf of Vino Lingo. Couldn't come up with a specific term, but I know there's a lot of wine speak that we utilize in the industry, and one of the things that I've been pondering the most is just this idea of weight, texture, and density. All things I think of as extremely important in the world of wine, especially in the world of fine wine, and especially even more so in the world of red wine. But oftentimes just trying to figure out how to describe and distinguish between these differences. And I know one of the best analogies I've always came up with is this idea of we have some wines that are the muscle builders. They're big, they're overwrought with muscles, they're strong, they're powerful, and everybody can see that. And then at the same time, there's the yogi master out there, which has an unbelievable strength and persistence in and of himself. And how these two compare side by side. And I don't know, maybe it's something I divulge reluctantly, but it's being a fan of the yogi master, I consider it a lot, and love wines when they have that persistence, that inner strength without the overwrought textural component, a density of character that is apparent but not overwhelming. These are some of the things that think about how to convey and share, and hope that everybody in their travels of wine enjoyment come to some of these same thoughts and conclusions too.
I'm Jean Figuier from Alpha Omega, and the word of the day is varietal. Varietal is really the personality, the DNA of a wine. What I mean by that is the varietal will determine what style of wine you will end up having. It's the heart and the soul of the wine. Some people will, of course, argue that rootstock is a varietal, which is the part of the plant that is in the ground that develops its root system. But usually you bud over a varietal, which is the end grapes that you're going to work with to make the wine. So my definition of varietal would be the DNA of the grape.
So my name is Kathleen Inman from Inman Family Wines in the Russian River Valley, and my word is Brettanomyces, or Brett for short. Brett is a spoilage yeast in wine that can give it a sort of barnyard or horsey, fecal, very unpleasant characteristic. So when you smell that in a wine, you can often think, ooh, they have a little bit of spoilage yeast. I'm not a fan of this characteristic, although there are some wines that, for certain parts of the world, where this is something people look for in the wine, I detest it. And so I even named my cat at the winery Brettanomyces, Brett for short, and he's the only Brett allowed in my cellar.
My name's Buck Bartolucci. I'm a member of the Bartolucci family. Our family owns Madonna Estate Winery in the southern end of the Napa Valley in the Carneros District. My word is propagation when it pertains to grapevines, because in California we have a pest called phylloxera. It requires that we plant our grapevines on resistant rootstock, that being rootstock that's resistant to the bug phylloxera. But that rootstock never has any fruit. So in order for us to end up with a given crop of, let's say, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, we have to either bud or graft onto that rootstock the variety we want. In our case, we use a technique called field budding, where we plant the rootstock in the spring of the year, and in the fall we come in and we take a little piece, a chip, of the grape variety we want, let's say Pinot Noir, and we make an incision into that rootstock and insert that chip into the rootstock and tie it with a rubber band. That sits over the winter. It knits into the plant. The following spring, we come and remove the head of the grapevine, forcing that bud that's knitted in there to grow. Thus, we end up with that variety that we want.
Hi, I'm George Martinelli with Martinelli Winery, and my word is vineyard designate. Vineyard designate means that all those grapes that were made in that bottle come from one site, one vineyard. The reason that the vineyard designate site is special is because it's one single vineyard and one specific site that where all the grapes come off and then they go into one bottle. So every year you know exactly what you're getting and you get the same flavors and it's consistency. And so that is the definition.
So I'm Aaron Pott from Pott Wine, and the word of the day is Vin de Pute, which means whore's wine. And it's a wine that is lush, rich, that envelops your tongue with all its lush characters and has an incredibly long finish and is easy to love.
Hi, I'm Sarah Fowler, winemaker here at Peugeot Winery. My wine word is clone. So I have a quick, easy explanation on what the word clone means to the wine industry, or what it is just in general. So a clone, there's all these different varietals, and we're talking wine specific. So there's Merlot, and there's Cabernet Sauvignon, there's Syrah, Chardonnay. But in each one of these varietals, there's what we call a clone. So what that means is, and I'll use an example, is Cabernet Sauvignon. There will be multiple different types of Cabernet Sauvignon. And with that said, a simple explanation would be Labrador Retriever. Labrador Retriever would be the varietal. The clone would be Chocolate Lab, Blonde Lab, Black Lab, even a Labradoodle. So to me, that's kind of an easy explanation on how to explain the word clone.
Steve Johnson of Parallel 44. My wife and I are owners here of our vineyard that we established in 2005. The word I would like to describe would be fruit forward. It's a word that we typically use in our winery. It's a more commonly used term these days also, but I think there's some misconception about what fruit forward means. Sometimes I think people say it's synonymous with sweetness, but for us, we've really found that the varietals that we grow here in the upper Midwest have a very fruit forward component. That is sort of the beginning of your expression on your palate. It sort of really pops, and that's due to two things, I think. One, the varietals that we have, like Frontenac, Fourche, Frontenac Gris, have that innate in the chemistry of the grape. But secondarily, this cooler climate we have, the aromatics of the wine seem to be captured in the grape. They don't burn off in the heat of a longer or hotter climate. And so we want people to really taste the fruit of the grape, and we have the benefit from our varietals and our climate that allows that to be expressed on your palate. And it's not necessarily the residual sugar in the wine that you're tasting, it's actually the flavor of the grape. Particularly important here in our neck of the woods, where there are actually a lot of fruit wines being made, and people need to make sure that when we say fruit forward, they're not thinking, oh, you put raspberries and strawberries in your wine. No, that's just the inherent flavor expression of the grapes we grow here.
Hi, this is Brooks Painter, Director of Winemaking at Castella di Amorosa, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the term Surlis or Lees. This is sometimes not a well-known concept. Lees refers to the solids at the bottom of a tank or a barrel. Surlis is the French phrase for meaning aging the wine on those solids and on those lees. Generally, as I said, it's composed of dead yeast cells, and as the wine remains in contact for a period of time on the lees, and I'm thinking of Chardonnay, for example, is a very standard protocol in Chardonnay production. Those yeast cells, as they age and start to decompose, they actually release various compounds into the wine, specifically some things called mannoproteins, and this will change the texture and the mouthfeel of the wine. It will add more volume. When you're aging Surlis, you will often go back and stir the lees, and again, borrowing a word from France, batonnage, you use your baton to stick into the barrel and swirl up the lees and mix it up. And this does a couple of things, including the enrichment of of the wine that I just referred to with mannoproteins, but it will also protect from oxidation because the lees are considered a sink for oxygen, and it actually will inhibit oxidation of the wine by leaving the wine in contact with the lees. And there's a number of other interesting things that occur during that aging process, but surely on the lees.
I am Marcus Goodfellow of Metello Wines, a small winery in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And my idea of dry farming is a vineyard, one that's not irrigated. And the point behind that simply being that when you introduce water into the plant, you change the dynamic of that plant's need for one of the formative aspects of its growth. You stop the plant from sending the roots deeper. You allow the plant to maintain moisture at a period when it normally wouldn't, so the plant doesn't create defenses. Every animal and every plant being whatever mutates and adapts to its particular situation. And if you leave it to adapt to its particular situation, it will create something that is unique in its own makeup and matter, which then will be reflected in the wine. And when you irrigate, you cheat the plant and the wine out of that individual nature.
This is Yannick Rousseau, winemaker and owner of Y. Rousseau Wines in Napa Valley. And today I just want to say a few words about tannins. Tannins, we spell it T-A-N-N-I-N. And tannins, it can be very confusing for a wine consumer, but it's really a component that we find in two different places in the berry. We find it in the skin and we find it in the seeds. And tannins is really what's going to give the wine down the road the backbone. It's like if you look at your body, you have the flesh and you have the bones. The bones is what gives the structure to the wine. And tannins can be sometimes not pleasant, but sometimes it can be very well balanced, and that's what's going to make a wine very ageable.
My name is Molly Hill. I'm the winemaker for Sequoia Grove Winery, and the grape varietal that I'm going to talk about is called Winte. Winte is a clone that a lot of winemakers fall in love with. It's a historic clone in California. The clusters are fairly ugly. They look like BBs and baseballs, or hens and chicks. There's a lot of berries that don't even have seeds. And what winemakers love about that is those very small berries have huge concentration. So I'm talking about the varietal Chardonnay. So these ugly little clusters have huge flavor impact. It's sort of a heady, rich, flavorful character that brings to the wine. We're lucky enough to use that clone in our Chardonnay. But if you can find Winte clone Chardonnay, I encourage you to check it out. It's delicious.
This is David Boss from Boss Wine, and I'm going to define concrete eggs or egg shapes. During fermentation, when you use an egg shape, all the yeast comes down to a central point, and it gives you a different texture and flavor in the wine. It's becoming more and more common as people are looking for things outside of oak or stainless steel. I use a plastic egg right now, and it adds a nice texture and adds an element during fermentation to Sauvignon Blanc that I love.
Jennifer Roberts, Picayune Cellars. A proprietary blend is a fictitious name made up by the proprietor, and it could be any particular combination of varietals. We chose Padlock for our red blend, and it gives us some freedom to change things around from year to year.
Hi, I'm Charlie Meeker. I'm the owner and co-owner with my wife and winemaker at the Meeker Vineyard in Sonoma County, and my word is Appalachian. Appellation. Well, Appellation, so it was started, I think, in France, and it defines a particular region. The French did it in the middle 1800s, and it defines a region that's has the wine's characteristic of that region. Sometimes there's multiple wines. And in France, it's very restrictive. You can only use certain grapes within each appellation. I mean, Bordeaux is an appellation, Burgundy is an appellation, Chablis. In the United States, and Italy's adopted that in a broader, but really in the similar, and once again, they restrict grapes. In the United States, like Dry Creek Valley is an appellation within Sonoma County. Russian River Valley is an appellation in Sonoma County. Alexander Valley is an appellation. And they're all defined, you know, by with limits around them. And there's no limit on what grapes you can do from them. We think, for example, that Alexander Valley is particularly great at growing Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, whereas Dry Creek is best known for Zinfandel, Petit Syrah, those style grapes, Syrah to some extent, and the Russian River, which is cooler, is best known for Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and grapes like that. So it's something to pay attention to, some appellations that are so broad, so large, that you know they cover different – they're not really specific in terms of a different wine region. But it's a good way to think of the wine business.
I'm Michael Scholes. I'm the winemaker with St. Supery Vineyards here in the Napa Valley. And, you know, the question at hand is how do we define clone, as in, I guess, clonal selection and what have you that we have in the vineyard. And that's it's a tricky little thing because while I feel like it's has clarity in my mind, the description is difficult. It's almost like – what's the difference between one species and another? When we're talking about vineyards, we're talking about grapevines, and a grapevine is a grapevine. But I guess if you looked at apples, not all apples come from the same variety of apple. You have a number of different apples, and that some are different colours and some are different flavours. Well, here in this business, we can actually have a variety, say, for example, Cabernet Sauvignon, and we can have it in different apple flavours, in a sense. And that's the difference between clones. They're different selections of the same variety, and therefore they'll bring unique qualities with them. And those qualities could be time of ripening, they could be density of structure, they could be vibrance of fruit, and they could be all these variables. But that's the difference between clones, I guess, is they have a unique quality between each other.
Kenny Kahn, Blue Rock Vineyard. Terroir, it's a French word that doesn't really have an English translation, but to put it as simply as I can, it is the sum total of everything that makes a vineyard and the resulting wine special. So that would be the soil, the climate, the aspect. I think that the human touch certainly has a lot to do with it. So it's everything that goes into making that site something that is unique and special that gives you the flavors and aromas that you get off of it.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.